Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Joss Ogonie, Will Bluewater, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Hello, everybody. Your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. Our guest is Utadihi Hicks. Happy Hicks is chief of the Shalagi Nudigi. Did I get that right, chief? Shalagi Nudigi?
Yeah, of course. Shalagi Yi Nudigi.
Okay. It shows you what
Shalagi is who we really are. Yi is located in Nudigi of Texas.
I don't know. You know, I have never taken Cherokee lessons, and I know how to write some of it. But anyway, welcome to the interview, Chief Hicks. Chief and folks, you'll have to excuse both of us. We both have problems with allergies, and you might hear either one of us coughing and sputtering a little bit during the interview. But I have been acquainted with Chief Hicks, I guess it's about 1998. And I've spoken with him on the phone several times. Chief is probably inside Special Forces Green Berets circles. He's probably one of the most well-known Green Berets in history. He more or less ran the secret war in Laos for the U.N. government, along with Vang Pao, and you're also
that
better.
That was more special operations than anything else.
And veteran of Korea and Vietnam both, I guess. And,
yep.
But a lot of people don't realize that the Cherokees have a history in Texas also. It's a fascinating history and one that's not over. And Steve wants to tell folks, well, let me give a little bit of a background first from what I know, and then we'll turn you loose. Prior to the Trail of Tears, going back as far as about 1721, the Cherokees began migrating into Mexico. Other groups migrated into what was then France, what's now Missouri, in the late 1700s. And traditionalist Cherokees moved to and established an Aniquitawa, or traditional government, in Arkansas, and had a reservation, a federal government reservation in Arkansas in 1817. But their chief saw fit to move into what is now Texas approximately during that period of time. And people have no idea, because it's not covered in the history books, that if it wasn't for the Cherokees, the state of Texas, well, number one, because they served as a buffer between the Mexicans and the Americans, and they chose to be neutral, Texas is now part of the Union. At least that's what they say. Some people would dispute that. But anyway, so go ahead and tell us a little bit more about the Cherokees in Texas. Chief, welcome.
Okay, Chief Diwali, that is Bowl, B-O-W-L in our language.
Uh-huh.
And whites call him Bowl, B-O-W-E-L-S, Chief Bowl for some reason. They tagged that onto him, trying to put him in with an English traitor during the old days.
William Augustine Bowl.
Yeah, Bowl. Diwali. And some people in Oklahoma says Diwali. That's a lower Cherokee dialect. And I speak over the hill, the Gatsisi Deli. That's where my people are from, along the Little Tennessee River. He came to, like I say, to Missouri, and with the great earthquake of 1811, they decided they would just move out of there, and they moved over to Arkansas. The U.S. government wanted them to move them above the White River, and he said, I'm not moving anymore. He thought he was already in Spanish territory, which had been once upon a time, then the French, and then the U.S. took over. And so he picked up his people and came south across the Red River into Texas. Wound up finally, that was in 1819, wound up finally around the area that I live now, up here in East Texas, around Tyler, Texas, in Smith County, Cherokee County, Texas. And the Spanish had always invited him in, and the Spanish wanted him in, wanted him, just what you said, to kind of be a buffer between Spanish land and also the new Americans that they didn't trust at all. So they went, come down here, developed many towns, because they were very, they elected all their town chiefs. They elected the main chief of Uku, which is the head chief, which is Diwali. They elected all the people. The Jalagi, or Cherokee people, always have. That's who we are. Ani Jalagi means our people. The word Cherokee is a foreign word. It started out from the Choctaw. They call it Chalukchi. That meant people from the cave country.
Uh-huh.
Because we were in the mountains of Great Smoky Mountains. And it's been changed around. I think I've found 50 different spellings of the word. Finally got down to C-H-E-R-O-K-E-E. So he'd come down here, established, like I said, fields. They're great farmers. Always have been great farmers, besides great warriors you've ever seen. The greatest. And even President George Washington said that when he was a lieutenant colonel in the colonial army. He said, during the French and Indian Wars, he said, give me a Cherokee to go with me, because one Cherokee is worth two other men. That's the Briton in history that he wrote to the English, at the British general, English general. So, they established here, was going fine. They had a good relation actually with the Spanish, and then when it came, changed over them, the Mexican government took over in 1823, then they became, you know, well done, documented with the Mexican government how well they were. In fact, the Mexican government gave him a lieutenant colonel commission in the Mexican army. And he was called Colonel Duwale after that, or Colonel Bowles. Also were very good friends of Sam Houston. And when they made the documents here of giving this land to the Cherokees in 1835, the Republic of Texas, he signed for Chief Bowles. He put down Lieutenant Colonel Bowles, B-O-W-L. And then Duwale put his text, you know, back. So it's in the history that that's the way his name was written, and then everybody changed it over to B-O-W-E-L-S. They were here until the Texas, Republic of Texas Army came and raided them and all the Indians in East Texas in July of 1839. The reason they did is because the president at the time didn't like any Indian in the world. He was going to get rid of everybody, all the Indians out of East Texas. And so he sent them up. They came in on July the 15th and 16th. On the 16th, they killed and scattered a lot of our people out. They killed Duwale. He was 80-some years old, and they killed him over here right on the other side of us in Van Zandt County. And some of the people, most of the people, like my family, went, ran to the woods, hid out, and then after the fighting was over with and everything settled down and all the whites left, they just come back to the land and started farming. You could be two things in Texas, black or white, but you couldn't be red. So they became white. And some were real dark ones was, later on, the government started calling them, listed them as black. But they came back. One group went towards Indian territory, and they had a fight guy trying to get through Choctaw country up to Tahlequah. Tahlequah didn't like them because they were real live Gilagi people. They weren't all modernized yet. And Duwale and his people did not speak anything but a little Spanish, but they knew no English at all. And the reason Sam Houston was able to contact work with them was because that he knew our language. Mm-hmm. He knew their language.
Well, he'd been adopted by John Jolly and was a Cherokee.
Yes. And so then another group went south across the Rio Bravo, or the Rio Grande, at Eagle Pass into Mexico, and farmed a town close to a big ranch out there, right above or south of Zaragoza, Mexico. And it was a land of the Hacienda de Cortinos. And these people liked them. They got along with them. And finally, the Gilagi people there, the Cherokees, finally did just like we did up here. We married into the Anglos. They married into Mexicans. They have Mexican names, a lot of them. Some of them still have names that they got from English. Like part of my family is a band. Bands are well known on both sides of the border. So it's developed over the years. A lot of the people that stayed here, a lot of the people will not say that they're Indian, because you could either be red or white, but you couldn't be both. And you couldn't be, white or black, you couldn't be red. Either one of those are fine. So they just stayed here and hid out, and it became, like my grandmother always said, that's my father's mother. his mother and father, you know, my father's a little half Indian from Bobotown. And she always called herself Black Dutch when she got out of the house. She would not tell anybody that she was an Indian of any type because it was just, you know, everybody kind of frowned her. And she was born in 1883 when it was really, really rough around here in all the world. After I retired, I was given a full medical retirement, 100% disabled, even though I did, after I retired, go to Central America and over Southeast Asia for a number of years. But after I retired, my father and I and some of the family and what have you joined a group called the Texas American Intertribal Association, American Indian Intertribal Association. And when I started going down to Central America to work the Nicaraguan Indians, well, he kept saying, hey, let's get our tribe started back up. He was always pushing that. He said, you're a leader. You've been out. You've done all that thing. You know how to get people together. I was president of the association before I left, the time I left there. So I went down doing that, going over Central, Southeast Asia, and I just kind of let it go a little bit. And when I come back and didn't go anymore, well, he hammered me. He grabbed hold of me, and he said, do something. So we formed the Yalagi Yi Nadagi. And, of course, the Texas Cherokees, everybody likes to call them. The fact is, we, four of us got together right here in my war room, and we did not start up a new tribe. What we did, with the aid of my father, old man, and a lot of other people, we reinstated the Yalagi, or Texas Cherokee here in Texas, the Hawaii, when Hawaii was killed. Because we did not leave on our own. We were run off by force. So we had never left. And I talked to my old teacher, Jolly Hicks. He was born in Joint Snake District in Old Indian Territory when he was born, you know, many years ago. He was my grandfather's old second cousin. And he and I was talking about it, and I said, hey, Jolly, I said, we are here for we never left. And that's what I signed on all my paperwork. We are here for we never left. And we never have. We're still here. A lot of all the old people. New people come in. My own family was going back and forth to the old country. Some of them got caught up in removal in 1839 and had to stay over there. And finally, they drifted back over here, as you know, just many years later. Because it wasn't no hurry, they couldn't go anywhere anyway and do anything, hardly. So, but we reestablished. We've got about 2,500 people that joined us. We don't care where you live right now. We just want to know one thing. Are you Yalagi? If you're Cherokee, then you're with us. We're not like other tribes, our own tribe, that denies people their heritage because they're not on some role, you know, some U.S. government role. U.S. government role, U.S. government doesn't tell us who we are. And bluntly, my father said, if your mother doesn't know who you are, who in the hell does?
My mother knew who we were.
Yeah, even though Breed, Indian, cowboy down in South Texas, he's pretty blunt to the point, I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, he died 4 years ago in December at age 96.
Oh.
And his father died at 99. And his mother, she died young, Dad said. She died at 94. So, oh, God, with all this old pain that I'm living with. I'm in my 70s now, and I may go that long. Oh, boy. But we're here, we're trying. If we are recognized the United States government, that's fine. But we know who we are. We don't need the government of the United States or the government of Texas to tell us who we are. We know who we are.
Well, the Cherokees of Mexico, they're fairly recognized, and they recognize it.
Yes, right. Yeah, and the states recognize it. The fact is, with Dr. Charles Rogers, who is the head chief down there, they elected and appointed me to be the Red Chief, the War Chief,
uh-huh,
for Mexico. And so we're getting pretty tight. The Mexican government itself does not recognize indigenous people. But any state can, and we've gotten recognized the three states right now.
Uh-huh.
So we in Mexico, right south of us.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And especially with the people out of the governor out of Saltillo, Coahuila, Mexico.
Uh-huh.
He is we're pretty close with him. So okay. Good man, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Osio is Cherokee for hello. This is Chia Sagonige, also known as Will Bluewater. I'm the International Communications Director for the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. I'm speaking on behalf of the seven clans and beloved woman Sharon Rogers, wife of Chief Priest and Principal Chief Charles L. Yatlohi Rogers, M.D., oncologist. Their family discovered the tomb in Mexico of Sequoia, the world-famous inventor of the Cherokee alphabet and the namesake of the Cherokee National Forest in California. The state of Oklahoma was very nearly named the state of Sequoia. Nación Cherokee de México, the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, is known in the United States as the Cherokee Nation of Sequoia of Mexico, Texas, and the USA Reservation and Church. Free of any charge, we are accepting citizenship and adoption applications, not only from Cherokee descendants, but from all people of good heart, from all lineages, just as we did for the 10,000 plus years before the United States government fairly recently imposed restrictions on Cherokee citizenship. Tennessee Governor Sam Houston had not one drop of Cherokee blood, yet he left office and later became Kalanu, or Speaker of Council, second only to Chief John Jolly of the Cherokee Nation West. The Republic of Mexico has recognized the Cherokee four times since the 1700s, and Spain five times before that. We possess original physical copies of all those treaties. In January of 2001, the San Andres Accords, enabling government-to-government tripartite relationships between sovereign Indian nations and the government of Mexico, were passed by the Mexican Congress. A few weeks later, the first such sovereign Indian nation, Nación Cherokee de México, was federally recognized in a solemn ceremony in Torreón, the capital of the state of Coahuila, formerly known as the province of Coahuila in Texas. The ceremony was followed by a fabulous celebration, which was attended by Cherokee elders from all over the Americas, including citizens of the federally recognized Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, people like Squaw Yee, the famed bowmaker Al Heron. There is so much more to share with you, so I encourage you to visit our website at CherokeeDiscovery.com. While you are visiting the website, feel free to fill out a free citizenship application. Please be patient, though. We have no paid staff, and applications may take up to 9 months or more to get processed. If you're not a Cherokee, feel free to request adoption. And please don't forget, tell them Bluewater sent you. Ski. Wado.
Huh?
Oh, but we're here, I'll operate out of my war room here where I live. Then we have a deputy chief. He is name of Deputy Chief Joe Gentry. He is a retired Air Force sergeant. When we have all the people elected, we have a seven membership in our, for a tribal council, all elected. And then we have, leaders for towns, like central towns, northern towns. We even have one town that's made of a group of towns up in the far north, northwest.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of Yalagi people up there.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize how many were until some of them started contacting me.
Uh-huh.
And, an old friend, he called me and he said, hey, Chief, he said, we're going to join you. I said, okay. And I knew who he was. He said, can we start one up here? And I said, you better believe you can. I said, you're one of us. And said, if that's what you want to do, and y'all go ahead and set your all your people up. And so a guy named Perkins is now the chief of them up there, Chief Perkins. So each one of the towns has their chief, just like in the old days when towns themselves had chiefs, because we're not united in these towns, or we just got a group of towns and make them town chiefs. So we're here because we probably never left. So that's how it stands. That sounds outstanding, Blue Otter. My war name is Asayadihi. That means man killer. I earned that in 1951, and as a rifleman in Korea, 1951-52. And very proud of it. Fact is, Jolly, my family member and old teacher, he told me when I killed my first man, I would become Asayadihi. And so that's who I am, and very proud of it. Nobody's proud of us when we came back from Korea, no matter whether you're black, white, or red, nobody cared about us. I mean, they, where you been, Korea? Well, where in the heck is that, you know?
Oh.
And we came back from Vietnam, they sure did not care for us. And then finally, in Gulf War in Iraq, people are really starting to be proud of our soldiers and sailors and Marines, Air Force, and everybody, and I'm that blame glad and proud of it. You know, everybody should be proud of it. But sometimes we have some people in Indian countries, we call it, who's against everything the white man does, everything the United States government does. I want to tell you something. If anyone out there, white, has ever been, or black, has ever been to powwow, the first thing we do of a morning, we put up the flag, the American flag, United States of America flag. And then we play a flag, beat the drum for flag song at $1,700 or 5 o'clock. We stop everything we're doing and go down and lower the flag and fold it and bring it off the dance ground. So, we're pretty proud.
Well, you know, Native people respect strength. They respect warriors. And, you know, we fought them for a long time. And people don't realize in 1866, the Indians in Oklahoma, after the Civil War, they signed a treaty that they would stop fighting between themselves and they would, between tribes, and they would stop fighting the United States government and be friends forever. And, only the Cherokee reserved the right to continue intra-tribal, you know, fighting, and they made that a matter of public record. I mean, that's and they are. You know, they turned their backs on the Chickamaugas. I mean, Chickamaugas basically were the people that. That went to Texas and some of my people.
Yeah, Dewali was a chief at Chickamauga with Dragon Canoe.
Mm-hmm.
And some of my own family was with him and everything.
I guess.
In fact, my name, the English name Hicks, has been in the nation since 1866. When Nathan Hicks came across the mountain and married Nanye He, anyway, Tamale.
1766, right. 1766.
Huh?
Don't you mean 1766?
Yeah, 1766. Right. What did I say?
1866.
Well, 1766. Mm. Yeah, 1766. Haniwaya means one who goes about. Haniwaya means wolf people.
Wolf people, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was a chief Hicks was one of the three chiefs in the Cherokee triumvirate. The name is very prominent.
Oh yeah,
From the 18th, I believe the Cherokee triumvirate that was around the 1820s and 30s.
Yeah,
and the leader.
Yeah, yeah. Nanyehe was the murder to the three Hicks children that started this whole bunch. And Nangehi means one who goes about. She finds
Ward.
Up the name. She what?
Nancy Ward, right?
No,
Nangehi, okay.
Nancy Ward. Both of them was Nangehi, and they became Nancy, so the white people called them all, English called them all Nancy, instead of Nangehi. She was a cousin of Nancy Ward. Nancy Ward was up in Isota, which is about 8 miles up the river.
Right.
Up the river from where our town was. Finally, Tamale is the name, but the English call it Tamale. And Ijate was called Isota by the English. So they changed lives around. We can't keep up what the heck we are or where we are.
Well, I know there's charity awards down in Texas. Hardy Ward's a friend of mine. He's very obviously a Cherokee. He was the world's archery champion in 1970. Previous to that, Ray Rogers was world champion archer, and he was from Tahlequah. You know, he drove a red truck for Sunbeam, you know. Cherokees, they've always been prominent in international archery competitions.
Well, they had it made up in the Indian Territory for being, because they've done what they always did. They had farms and everything. And then Spencer Dahl came down and looked the clan over, and he said, hey, this is too much land for a bunch of red heathens. So he made an agreement thought up a bill inside the United States Senate. It passed through Congress. That all the land would be taken away from the Indians as a whole, as a tribe for each one, and given to individuals. Well, it's like after slavery, you know, 4 acres and a mule, you know, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And they'd take away all the rights of the chief. There would be no more chiefs. And then about 1916 or 17, it changed over Oklahoma, and there was no more chiefs, no more real tribal land, owned land, or anything else, because it belonged to the state of Oklahoma. And that's when the people moved in, the white people moved in, Anglos, and took over all the land, the state, some of the best land, and all the oil wells and everything. It became oil wells. Everybody did, but the Osage. The Osage took out a piece of the Cherokee Strip up in the north, just close to Kansas. They kept their land. They would not sign with a treaty with the United States government, and kept their land. That's the only reservation in Oklahoma.
That's right.
But I'm still learning.
Oh, the government basically they allotted the land, terminated the tribes and terminated the government, and we had a constitution since the second constitution in 1835, and then I believe it was in 1970 the Supreme Court ordered 5 civilized tribes to once again start up their governments, and I think it took them 5 years to come up with the constitution they have right now. But, you know, the interesting thing about it is had they started back up under the 1835 Constitution, under Section 1, any Cherokee could have memorialized the council and been readmitted, but I don't believe that's what they wanted this time around. There's always been a faction that had run Tahlequah, and they didn't like Dragon Canoe. Matter of fact, Dragon Canoe's successor, I'm having a senior moment right now. I can't remember his name, the chief, Dragon Canoe's successor, red haired.
Oh, yeah, and I can't even think of it either.
But anyway, his family, I want to say Fields, but that's not right either. In the 1880s, his people managed to get on the roll. See, people don't know. Well, some people don't know that unless you walk the Trail of Tears and sign the register at Tahlequah, you cannot have Cherokee citizenship to this day. And, well, the Chickamaugas, you know, a lot of them, they came across of their own free will. They came to Arkansas and here in Missouri, years and years before the Cahuillas, and, they weren't going to sign. So once the, and you know, most of the Cahuilla Society lives here in Missouri and Arkansas, and when Chief, Ross arrived here, he ordered all the chiefs from Missouri and Arkansas to show up at, the Illinois campground. He says, you either show up by a certain date or you're outlaws.
Yeah.
A few did and most didn't. I live in Texas County. This county was formed by a bunch of mixed blood people that went down to Texas and then came back, and it's called mm-hmm. Texas County. And I think if you looked at the dates of the incorporation of the it'd be interesting to take a look at the dates of the incorporation of the county and see if that corresponded with the Mirabeau Lamar
39 removal here.
Yeah, and yeah, Mirabeau Lamar. I probably shouldn't even mention his name because he was the second governor of state of Texas and an Indian hater and a former Georgia man. And
He was president of the Republic.
That's right. Yeah, that's
Republic
right.
Of Texas.
Right. He was the second. But he was former governor.
He took Sam Houston's place. He had worked. He had been the secretary for Crute in Georgia. He was a great. He was all the Cherokee and the Creeks.
Yep.
And so he said, oh, we're going to get rid of all of them, which they did a pretty good job of it.
You know, they Chief Duwali was, I guess he was wounded and sitting on the ground. They just walked up to him and shot him in the head. But what they really wanted was that bloody, what they got was a metal cylinder that had the treaties in it that Duwali carried with him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess his sword eventually made its way up to Tahlequah. But they wanted those papers.
Well, the original is down in Austin, wound up in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
The original, you know, copy, and then they gave him gave Duwali a copy also.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a copy of that, and someone has changed that from the old copy I had with Colonel Bowles. The new copy has Colonel Bowles, B-O-W-L-E-S.
Mm-hmm.
So, like every time a white man historian does something, he wants to change it around a little bit.
Well, I think
I've got a lot of my family that came across the trail. They wound up in Indian Territory. And then they wound up on the Dawes Road, but we're down here, we're not considered as real Indians, and by people in Tahlequah, which is alright, me. And we can't join on account of we wasn't there whenever that,
uh-huh.
you know, this all came through. And so I said, well, okay, that's alright, all of us down here, some did go back up there, their families asked them to go back up. Jolly told me that my great grandfather said that he wasn't about to go up there. But a lot of them said, this is what they all said, that I've got word when I was real young, years ago, that if we went back up there, we might be hooked to the United States government and lose all of our land down here in Texas,
uh-huh.
and we're not about to go. And they didn't go. And it's pretty reasonable. I wouldn't have gone back up there either because you know, the Indian has been, the red man has been shot pretty much holes out all their trees by the United States government. So why do that? You know, go up there and give away all your rights, really.
Yeah. Well, it seems like, the same thing here in Missouri. There's tons for instance, John Slayton. I met John Slayton, the U.S. government calls him James Slayton, but this man was a Medal of Honor winner, and he was pursued to his dying day by the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms people. this. I met him, I guess about 3-4 years ago, obviously either, he could have been no less than half Cherokee. He looked like he was full, he was possibly a full-blooded Indian. But being, you know, being a full-blood Cherokee was by the traditionals, they didn't care what color your skin was. It was, according to your attitude, is whether you were full-blood or not.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But this man looked like you.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of Indian blood and not a lot of white blood. But this man died here a couple of years ago and buried in Poplar Bluff. And, but he charged, took out 3 machine gun nests, in Italy. And, is a Medal of Honor winner. And,
what did you say his name was?
Slayton.
Clayton.
Slayton, Slayton. And,
I think I know who you're talking about. I know a lot of Medal of Honor. I go to their, to their convention sometime with an old friend of mine, Roger Donald, who received the first Medal of Honor in Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
He's an ace captain, he's a team leader captain for the his A team over close to Cambodian border.
He wrote the book, Outpost of Freedom, which I read years and years ago.
Huh?
He wrote the book Outpost of Freedom, which I read
years ago. No, he wrote the book, it's Nam Dong.
Mm-hmm.
Nam Dong, yeah.
Outpost.
He's an old friend of mine. He and his wife, Norma, are mine, Margie, you know, we call them real close friends, and we are, because they're beautiful people. he is a tall Irishman from upper state New York, which means pretty good guy. And, she is, her family was interned in an Arkansas, camp for Japanese people brought out of California, and she was born, her mother was pregnant when she come across from California to Arkansas, and she was born there in a camp.
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church, or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Oh, Norma's a beautiful lady, man. We love her with passion. I tell you, this family does.
I know, I was so moved.
A lot of people got the problem.
I recommend that people get Captain Donlin's book, Outpost of Freedom, from Interlibrary Loan. I was so moved.
That's right.
Every year, Captain Donlin and the survivors, they visit the grave of I believe it's their first sergeant or master sergeant that was killed.
Yeah, he was a team leader, team sergeant, and I can't even think of his name now, and I know who you're talking about.
I can't either, but I tell you, after I read that book, I personally made the pilgrimage to his grave at Arlington.
Yeah.
And, the only...
he got the Distinguished Service Cross.
I wish I could have been there the time of year, so I could have met Captain Donlin and the other survivors. And,
Donald retired as a full colonel. We was also in the advanced course together, Fort Benning, Georgia, infantry officer advanced course, and a lot of my other friends. All my friends, since I was shot out of saddle early on in the military, all my friends are colonels and one general out of the bunch.
Right? Well, you were a captain, as I recall, right?
Yes, I retired as a captain. I went in as an enlisted man. I was an enlisted man in the Korean War, a squad leader, and came home, went to college at Texas A&I in Kingsville, got my first degree and my commission. I'm overly educated. I've got 3 degrees. And got my commission, went back on to active duty. I went into Special Operation 1959. And I got shot out of the saddle and retired in 1 June 1969 with a full, you know, physical retirement. And I was in about a year in the hospital, Walter Reed Womack Army Hospital. Came home, took me about 3 years to recover. And then a few years later, 1980, I was asked to go down and work with some Indians that I knew that I hadn't met at a different time and place at all. Some sashaying around the world. And they were the Suma, Mosquito, and Rama Indian tribes from Nicaragua. And they were fighting against the Sandinista communists. No matter what some of these people up here said, they were communists. And they were fighting against them, and I went out and talked to commando, got to blow up things, and somehow them and some of the others, you know, small unit tactics. So did a lot of other Americans. I wasn't the only one doing it. There was a lot of good stuff going on to help down to help those people.
Well, tell me, Chief, did you break the Neutrality Act when you went down there?
All because I had support of the people in Washington, D.C.
Oh, you had orders. Okay. I know. I've got a
friend. Like I've always ran Blue Otter, I always ran. Nobody knew who I was, where I was going, or who I was working for. None of nobody damn bit.
I've got a friend in Utah named Bob Strongbear Bates, and Bob was down with a group under Colonel Grice. And one day some of the communists come across the border and snap some of their buddies. And, I mean, there was no war going on, so, they had orders not to go rescue him, but they went and did it anyway, and, I didn't know this until several years after I knew Bob, because we were invited to go over to Bosnia, and several people were, and go to Medjugorje because of the spiritual goings on over there. They were inviting Indians to go, and I invited Bobby, and he says, I can't go. And I said, well, why? He says, I've kind of violated the Neutrality Act, and I'm not allowed to go to war-torn lands, you know. And I said, what are you talking about? And he says, you know, they were in Panama, you know, one of his buddies was kidnapped, and he says, they raided the armory, crossed the border, snagged him, and brought him back. And one of the other guys that was Bob's friend that went on to become one of the editors for Soldier Fortune magazine. But Bob, he got back. He's got five different sets of jump wings, Chief. He's got jump wings from...
Yeah.
From the United States, then he went TDY to Canada. He was with them for a while training. Then he went TDY to Great Britain and trained with the Special Air Services. And then they sent him to be with the UN forces in Israel. So he's got jump wings from the United States, Canada, Great Britain, Israel, and I think he. Somewhere Australia, I think, along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But, he sure got some stories to tell, he came back to the United States and was a constable in down around Houston, which is the equivalent of a county sheriff, was investigating an accident and was hit by a drunk driver. And I think Bobby's had like 16 back surgeries in the last 25 years. And he's quite a guy. I think you know who I'm talking about, Bob Bates.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
And he's quite a guy.
Well, see, I went into foreign countries that they didn't want me to go in. I mean, the U.S. government didn't want me to go into, but our job we went into. And only thing is, nobody knew who I was doing, who I was working for. So that kept me pretty clear of everything. A lot of times I worked under that other name. And that's like on my email site, Owen. I had Stryker Hip. I used Stryker Hip when I was traveling in Southeast Asia, but I never ran ops under it. And when I was in Laos, I never did run ops under the name of D.L. Pappy Hicks. People who seen it brag and seen it different places knew who I was, but nobody else knew. And they never said, "Hey, Pappy, how you doing?" Because, you know, you just didn't do that. It's not over there. We all operated. A lot of them I knew that operated there that we never said a thing until after we came over here. And we didn't say anything out in public until U.S. Congress recognized General Vang Thao and the Hmong people of the mountains of Laos in 1997. And we had a big formation up at the up on the Mall of Washington, D.C. I went up and made a speech there, and I would have made several speeches there with General Vang Thao. And then, you know, we could tell each other, you know, "Hey, we know, knew each other, was in Laos."
Uh-huh.
Even if we hadn't seen each other, we'd heard of each other, knew of each other from other guys like us. But otherwise, nobody knew where we went, what we did, or anything like that. And I'm glad of it because
saved life.
I was already. Huh?
It saved lives. You didn't know who the other guy was because
that's right.
It just helped the enemy build a dossier on you.
That's right. Yeah. Dossier on another name you run an operation, but they don't know who. I guess now they've changed, you know, put a pack of hits on it, but a lot of people, it doesn't make any difference, you know. Especially the Soviets who was in charge of operations in both Saigon and in Laos. People don't realize it.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that was it shortly before that or after that I guess President Clinton was at that ceremony with you and Vang Thao and the others, you know, after the decorations were declassified. And but you also, I saw a picture at one time where you went and visited President Clinton with people from your tribe in his office after you filed for federal recognition.
Yeah, we didn't get in his office.
I'm
up there. We got a letter stating that, go through Texas. Texas government down at Austin says go through Washington, D.C. But no kidding.
Yeah.
So we're at a wall, a big wall between us and them, both governments.
Well, Texas has never really done a whole lot. I understand that there were, years ago, maybe in the 40s and 50s, that there was initiatives to get some of the land back because they only soon had 1 million acres.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand the state of Texas offer land in the panhandle and you turned them back.
The reason the Texas government was able to just knock that in the head immediately because these weren't people who were originally Texas Cherokees. These were people from Tahlequah who was wanting land down here in Texas. And the Texas government was able to shoot them out of saddle and hurry before it was over. And we plowed through that before, you know, and so that's what my dad said. My father, he said, "Well, these new people are not Texas Cherokees, but they came from Oklahoma and up here wanting to make some money, you know, and get some extra land." So it might have been, I don't know. I'm just going with what some of the old people said. You know.
Well, I know you'd like to invite anyone out there who has Cherokee blood to join you. I guess all that's needed is an affidavit and
notarized affidavit. That's what your mama told you you were.
That's right.
Because as my father pointed out, when he came up this, if your mother doesn't know you, who in the hell does? No tribal government, no U.S. government, because he said A notarized affidavit is good in any court and land, including the Supreme Court of the United States. If you sign a notarized affidavit and you're caught lying, then you suffer consequences.
Uh-huh.
And And everybody should know that. If they don't know it, so they're in a world of hurt. Now, there's no doubt in my old feeble military mind that we don't have wannabes that's joined us. But most of the people that's with us have been known around their community that they are who they say they are. They've signed affidavits that that's who they are. And I have no reason to disbelieve them.
Well, you know, you have a lot of people that have Cherokee blood that, you know, act like wannabes because they don't know how to act, you know,
and
so it's, you know, it takes time to reacculturate back into becoming, learning what it's like to be a Cherokee. I know, you know, there's a lot of our people, well, you know, when the Ottawahee here, Grandfather Richard Craker, he said that years ago in the 60s, he started going to the Will Rogers Indian Club meetings, and he says, back in those days, everybody around Tahlequah, they were all wanting to learn Cheyenne Indian ways. And so they were, the Cherokees was wannabe Cheyennes. And he says, there was one old...
Well, they didn't have any of their own.
What? He says, there was one old Cherokee Ottawahee, and they weren't interested in Cherokee ways. They were interested in Plains ways. And he says, but he's become a apprentice up underneath this this old Cherokee Ottawahee that could name his successors all the way, his predecessors all the way back to Dick Justice. And when he died, Grandfather Richard became old man. And he lives, oh, I guess, you know, 60, 70, 80 miles from here. And he put a stomp dance one day. It took maybe an hour to get to the stomp dance, but he spent 3 hours separating us into clans because you've got to be organized as clans first. And he, there are 60 people there. He quizzed them all about, well, what's your mother's name, mother's mother, and mother as far back as you could remember because you can't have stomp dance. And he had a list of names that he kept secret, and he checked it with what he knew and where the names came from, and organized us into clans and put us through stomp dance and drank the black drink. And, you know, unless you acculturate back into becoming Cherokee, I mean, you can run around with thinking and doing and saying all kinds of things that aren't Cherokee and give the impression you're a wannabe, but we invite everybody to come back and have people like Chief Hicks teach you how to be Cherokees, and we just won't have them, any of them ask me to teach them any of the language.
it's hard. I've among all the things that I had besides my right side messed up and everything else, I've also got brain damage, and I've lost most of my language because I've been away from it so long.
Mm.
I've lost Spanish I used to speak because I'm from South Texas. A little French, I knew enough to get something to drink. And my mouth and yard, you know, and stuff like that. And I was starting on my Zilagi when I was a kid, but it's hard to keep track of it, I want to guarantee you, especially that language. Jolly told me, he said, you learn this language, you will see old men sit around the fire and talk and never close their mouth. Because in our language, there's only two prominent words that has a letter where your lips come together. That's ama, water, and ama, salt. Everything else does not have your lips never come together.
That's
right. That's a Cherokee, see, and R's, there's no R's in the Gatsuti Dele, the over the hill people. The lower town that's close to what is now Georgia and South Carolina, down in Georgia, South Carolina, down that area, they had an R, which the over hills and the upper towns did not have.
Well, you just confirmed what John Red Hat taught me, because John was born about 25 miles away from here in Ada. Now, at the beginning of the broadcast, I said, you know, we're coming to you from Booger County. Well, Booger County is a five-county area that has been known for a long, long time to be Cherokee, old Cherokee area. It's a lot of mysterious things have always gone on here, lights in the woods, and, you know, it was the white people know, that would see, you know, we'd be off in the woods someplace to stop that, and when it was illegal and you could get thrown in jail for it, as it did. So, you know, it was associated with supernatural, and most of the white people don't understand why it's called Booger County. But John said, now John was a Nighthawk Cthulhu, and you've danced with the Nighthawk Cthulhus, and the Nighthawks, I mean, most of those people don't have, most of those are full blood and half blood, and they don't have cards in Tahlequah either, and they don't care to have them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as far as they're basically the religious general authorities for the Cherokees in Oklahoma, but, I mean, basically, you know, if you're from Tahlequah, you're not invited to come stop dancing with them. You know, they actually after the U.S. government broke up the Cherokee Nation, the only real sovereignty that remained with the Catoosa Society. In the 40s, some of those people, because the Catoosa Society couldn't be political because they were religious in nature, they operated on a very low-level political nature. Some of them broke off and formed an organization. It incorporated as the United Catoosa Band of Cherokee Indians, and they were the first to receive a federal recognition in 1949. And a lot of people don't realize that.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Oklahoma Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
And it was the Cherokee Nation, they incorporated as the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, which really is a misnomer because Indian tribes are not supposed to be of another state. It's like, you know,
right.
they incorporate under the Indian Welfare Act.
So we say we're not of Texas, we say we're in Texas.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That's right, exactly what it is, we're in Texas.
That's right, and we're not asking anybody's permission to be a Cherokee. And, we got an attitude, don't we, Keith? That's the way it is. You know, after we moved to Oklahoma, I believe it was about 1890, we petitioned the United States government to the Oklahoma Cherokee, someone petitioned to let us go back to Mexico, because that's where we came from.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, you're a slave now, and you got to stay here.
Yeah.
And
you're talking about the people that have blood. There is some near full blood, if not full blood, that lives right around in Tahlequah and that area.
Yeah.
That are not on the road.
Up north of town, yeah, they're up there.
Yeah, they never have been on the road.
That's right. And
I know a lot of them. Some of them are the best artists you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't even one his name was Stone was the best wood carver you've ever seen.
Well,
he had to take all his carvings and everything. He took all his carvings out of the the museum and their place else on account of him not having documented role from BIA.
That's right. Well, I know Clifford Alford, who's a member of your tribe, he lived in Tahlequah for several years and had a free traditional clinic right across from it was right on the square at Tahlequah.
Mm-hmm.
And until one Baptist preacher Cherokee's mostly acculturated in Baptist church. There was one Baptist preacher that put out the word that Clifford Alford was the Antichrist. And after that, people stopped visiting his free traditional clinic.
Yeah.
But Clifford put him in charge of several springs, sacred springs out north of town. He finally left town, but he said back about year 2000, shortly before he left town, he says people on Tahlequah, they got a real bug about wanting to get back to being traditional, and there was a couple meetings held, and he says there were several hundred people showed up at the first meeting, and then at the second meeting, Principal Chief was there, and somebody got up, and a lady said, well, you know, does this mean we're all going to go back to our buckskins? Anyway, the chief got up at that point and thought, well, you know, I'm a Baptist, you know, and that really threw a wet blanket over the whole thing, oh, it's really interesting, but, I know,
who are you talking about had the clinic?
Clifford Alford.
Oh, yeah.
Out in Oregon, New Mexico. You know, and I don't want to say, you know, I'm not saying bad things about Chad Smith. Chad, wonderful guy. He's done a lot. He was responsible for asking the people in the Cherokee Nation, to stop calling people that don't have cards wannabes. And he's doing what
right.
he can, but he's under
off no end.
But, you know, he's under political pressure to do certain things, and you know, he does things behind the scenes, too, that people don't know about, but, you know, things, attitudes change slowly, I just found it so ironic that people, you know, that most of the people in Cherokee Nation have become Christians, and the point that the traditional Cherokees, most of whom don't have cards, and saying, well, you're not a Cherokee.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or any other kind of Indian.
Yeah. And they used to, they had the same attitude toward the Eastern Band until they got federal recognition. Well, now they're best buddies. And back when Wilma Mankiller was in office, I believe it was back in 94 or 5, they got together and had a joint resolution. It was in reaction to, I believe there was 80 Cherokee organizations that signed the Cherokee Unity document, and I made her mad, and the National Councils in Tahlequah and Cherokee North Carolina got together made a joint resolution blasting the states of Georgia and Alabama for recognizing state recognizing Cherokee, some Cherokee tribes.
Mm-hmm.
But things are changing, you know. I guess they viewed it as a threat to their sovereignty. But, you know, there is no real sovereignty. I mean, sovereignty is when you own your own artillery, you know?
Yeah.
That's sovereignty.
That's right.
You
that's
know?
Right. Your own artillery and tanks. I mean, you've got a little.
You've got some sovereignty. And, you know, if you can't keep armies away from your borders, you're not sovereign. You're sovereign. We're supposedly sovereign-dependent nations, which means...
That's right. All these sovereign people are just in these Cherokee tribes, offshoot tribes like we are and all this kind of stuff. They don't have any more sovereignty than anybody else in this country has. And one thing, too. When you say, Native people, my wife's a Native people. She's first-generation Finlander and lives in this. Up in Minnesota, people come from Finland, but she's Native. She's a Native American. Hell, she was born here. Where else was she born? And that's being Native American. She didn't come from the indigenous people of America.
Right. Well, that's what Russell Dean said. He says everybody's born here Native American. He says we voted over in Geneva to call ourselves American Indian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and there's all this political correctness and so forth. And
PC is one of a lot of people. And my father, especially between tribes or in tribes, even inter tribes, and my father always said another thing that I've heard a lot of the people, Indians are the own worst enemy.
Yep.
And we do ourselves harm many times.
It really is. It's really sad. There's been so much. You just wouldn't believe the political fighting and wrangling and stuff that's gone up here in Missouri, Chief.
It's fun to hear.
It's really sad. You know, I've got people that, well, you know, the word got out. You know, I worked with one tribe up here for quite a while with their economic development director, and we arrived shortly at the time. Our second council meeting that we attended as observers, we watched the vice chief illegally take over the tribe. She supposedly put the chief on probation, but it was illegal. It was not on the agenda, and in proper time. And the only way to beat that was to have 80% of voting members there, either by proxy, and you know that wasn't taken care of either.
Mm-hmm.
But she just was like a bulldog and kept pushing, and eventually did take over the tribe, but the takeover was illegal. And nobody ever believed anything that she said until she told people that my wife and her was in it with her from the beginning to depose the chief of that. So that's right. You know, Indians are their own word.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm glad to be your friend.
And, you know, so the word got out that I was a Fed. And there was even a lawyer, and I won't mention his name, but he's a crusading Indian Cherokee attorney, and it took him a couple of years to sort it out. But and he'll tell you, he never apologizes to anybody. Well, he called me one night, apologized to me. He says, "Scott," he says, "I got to looking into it," and he says all that. He says, "You're not guilty of any of that stuff." He says, "I had the tribe's entire records to go through," and he says that I was able to sort it out, and he said that woman, all she had to do was make the statement. She knew how to divide and conquer. And you see, we've learned, Indian people have learned from white people how they've learned how to do a lot of things. There's nothing happier in Indian politics. I've never seen the likes of it.
Yeah, and they're always fighting, especially when you get in the intertribal. We was in this intertribal thing. I've gotten home one night, and there's been a lot of confusion going on and everything between some of the people, especially some of the women. Now, ladies, we had more trouble with women than we did men. Men are afraid of each other. And so we're driving home, and after all this, Dad says, "The worst problem you have in any meeting is when they try to out-Indian each other."
Yeah.
You know, I'm more Indian than you are.
Yeah.
I know more about it than you do.
That shows a lack of self-esteem. That's another thing I said about Indians is we have low self-esteem.
Yeah.
If we had good self-esteem, why would we be wanting to out-Indian each other?
Yeah, that's correct.
It's so silly.
That's correct.
But you know, this is I'm a seventh generation now from removal, and we're into the birth pangs now of creators reorganizing us and reintroducing ourselves to each other, and you know, according to the prophecies, there won't be a U.S. government or any other governments here pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back on our own again. We can be free.
Have to fight without tanks and guns.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know who was a prophet? Well, was old Albert Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
He said he wasn't sure how the... This is the World War II. He says he wasn't sure how they were going to fight World War III, but he knew that World War IV was going to be fought with spears and rocks.
He might be right.
So there might not be a whole lot of us left. But as long as the Cherokees have got caves to go to get away from the radiation, when that's over with, they'll be Cherokees.
We'll farm up again.
That's right. Start over again. But anyway.
As long as you got the blood, no matter how much. I'm a little over a quarter, but I don't give a damn if you're you know, just a smidge to say, hey, my great-great-great-grandfather or great-great-great-grandmother, that's fine with me.
Well, you know, the Great Spirit can reteach us our ways and our ceremonies, and or he can form us all into a new nation, as far as that goes.
By the way, Chief Rogers down in Brownsville, Dr. Rogers, sent me a booklet that he has written up about what's going on down along the border of our country, especially along Texas, in the Criminal Throat. And he put in there about how he had been kidnapped out of his clinic in Matamoros, right across the river.
Now, remember, we're on the air, Chief. You want this to go on the air?
Yes, right.
Okay.
And because he put it out publicly now.
Oh, good.
And I wouldn't be saying anything about it. And he sent this document, small pamphlet. He sent out. He sent it to all the people in Congress, this thing, and explaining of all the problems they're having down there. Plus him being kidnapped, and his family hadn't paid off a pretty good size ransom. He is taking his all of his clinic work. It's having to be done by satellite on a big screen areas at home because he's afraid to cross the border again. He is wanting to get across back to his clinic because if he says a lot of people are going to die if I don't get back over there. My wife and some other people said, hey, look how much work he has done in Mexico and look what he has done for all the Mexican people. And then they come in and do that. I had a reminder that some of the people does not care who they hurt or who they killed or who they fight or anything as long as they get the money.
Well, they came right into his office and kidnapped him, didn't they?
Yes. Yes, three men came in and pinned him up some more people. And they're not sure if they're police or what they are or who they are. He was pretty angry, so he put in this letter and said, that may be police.
Well, that's the rumor down there that the banditos is the federales at daytime and banditos at night.
Yeah. That's a cruise. As much as I like Mexico, I've been down there, going down there since I was a kid. Got a lot of friends down there. And as long as I've been down there, going down there, and I like so many people, that's the way it is with their government. And it's hard to get around, and we're really standing on right going one way or another with the main Mexicans coming up here if they want to send in, you know, banditos and things like that, and also people that's from the Mideast and what have you. When I was down in Central America, me and some of the other guys wrote back that. Back documents and everything about all of the people from the Muslims in Central America,
mm-hmm.
and the Chinese that came up, and now they're out on, and now they're finding out and saying, yes, we've known that for 20 years that they were doing that. Well, baloney, you know, we just tell them that they were down there.
They don't want to know.
There's a lot of Chinese on around the Panama Canal. And there are a lot of Muslims all around in central and southern Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming up further now. So they come across the border and blow up another train or something.
Well, they found a jacket somewhere on the border just last week. It really, there was a big panic in the last week or so on the border because there was a jacket that was found that had embroidered on it. Two towers, you know, with an airplane flying toward it, you know. And
yeah.
Well,
I'm about to play out, Blue Otter. I'm going to have to go. I'm about to choke down.
We sure appreciate you being been a real trooper.
Okay. Yeah, you've been a good interrogator.
Well, we've elicited another information from him. We'll let you go and... thank you so much, Chief, and folks. We encourage you to. But it's still a $15 processing fee for application.
who it is? No, it's $25.
$25, okay.
And $10 for all for family members after the first person has come in, then $10 for each family member after that.
Well, we'll put up a link so people can download applications, and I know there's Cherokees all over the place. I know would really could benefit from associating with y'all.
Thank you very much.
And this has been another edition of Prophecy Keepers. And as a matter of fact, you are our 52nd interview. You are the first anniversary of Prophecy Keepers Radio, Chief. And
good.
Thank you so much. Goodbye now.
Glad to have joined you.
Bye-bye. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Let the truth be known.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
Let the wind blow. Let the truth. like a lover's hand upon the heart, the very breath you